Get ready for a completely new approach to spiritual growth and the true meaning of life. Rather than aspiring for a state of enlightenment where worldly concerns and human weaknesses are transcended forever, best-selling Nightingale Conant author Stuart Wilde invites you to a journey beyond enlightenment and the pursuit of a spirituality that can be described with one word: authenticity.
Why do you need to go beyond enlightenment, and why would you bother to make this journey? And I suppose the resounding reason is that if you look inside your soul, you'll see that there's something missing. You always know that there's something that isn't working. There's some bit that you don't know, that you haven't found, that you're sort of wandering around looking for the key to everything without knowing what the key looks like or what it is that you're actually searching for. So the reason for this journey beyond enlightenment is really to arrive at the complete you, the authentic you, the whole you. Our human body is small, I mean sort of 5 to 6 feet tall or slightly taller, but in fact, deep down, we're vast. We're bigger than the universe, the whole of the Milky Way you could hold in your hand. So you're a microcosm, and then there's a macrocosm version of you that is absolutely enormous. And so the reason to make the journey and the reason to go into the unknown, and of course, when you say unknown to people, they tend to get a little worried that you're going to be whizzing them off into some sort of totally chaotic place. But the journey into the unknown does take a certain amount of bravery. But then the yearning, the nostalgia for eternity that I speak of, is this thing where we yearn to be whole. And the journey beyond enlightenment, which of course is an ego trip enlightenment, it's a spiritual elitism, it doesn't exist. But the journey beyond enlightenment is saying, what I want is completeness. What I want is wholeness. What I want is to arrive back to where we all came from.
Stuart Wilde, author of the Nightingale Conant audio bestsellers Infinite Self and Discovering Your Sixth Sense, is considered one of the leading-edge spiritual thinkers alive today. An urban mystic, modern visionary, and author of over 15 books on consciousness and awareness, he is well known for his wit, wisdom, and profound ability to challenge the sacred cows of the New Age movement. One of those sacred cows is the notion that the end goal of spiritual growth is enlightenment, or what some spiritual authors call living in the light. According to Stuart, enlightenment is not the end goal, but just the beginning for the true spiritual adventurer. It's going 10 feet underwater in an ocean that is thousands of feet deep. There is a world of spiritual realities to be explored that are hardly even addressed or considered by the New Age mainstream. In this mind-expanding program, Stuart will take you into what he calls the world of the etheric via your imagination in order to explore a huge variety of new spiritual terrain: the morph, a spiritual overlay of energy that permeates our world, transdimensional beings, ESP, dematerialization, magical healing, bilocation, dimensions, and the existence of modern Camelots, and much more. Beneath all of the wondrous realities that Stuart will explore with you in the coming sessions lies one key essential truth. The only true spiritual path is a path that embraces the authentic you. And now, the Nightingale Conan Corporation is pleased to present Stuart Wilde.
Hello, this is Stuart Wilde. Welcome to this new audio series, The Journey Beyond Enlightenment. I'm going to show you something very empowering that is special, that is usually misunderstood or hidden away. For the journey beyond enlightenment is essentially a journey beyond the confines of this three-dimensional reality, past what you think you know to a hidden door inside a hyper-dimensional reality. There you'll see the true nature of the extraordinary power of what has come to be known as the authentic you. Normally we live in what might be a confined, rather fake, humdrum existence with little inspiration as to the future. But I'll lay out now how to step off that path, and I'll tell you how many people have literally walked into another world, a magnificent world of trans-dimensional beings and helpers, and the potential of a super-knowing that is not limited by false boundaries and damaging limitations of the ego and egocentric perceptions of life. There is a mirror world to this one, and I'll tell you the story of that and how to get there and what to do to help yourself once you're there. You decide how little or how much you feel you wish to explore. This audio series is slightly different to others you might have heard in the past. They usually deal with practical things. Thin thighs in 30 days, the rules of effective management, of the laws regarding success and so forth. This series deals with the invisible you, the one you can't normally see. That is where your supernatural power is. It's akin to the Taoist concept of looking at the spaces between the leaves of a tree rather than looking at the actual tree. It's all about what's in the gap and how you will learn to walk into that gap. Once you're there, looking back at the world, you will never see the world the same again. Much of the struggle and pain falls away, and you'll see it all in a higher light. The journey beyond enlightenment is not the acquiring of new rules. It's letting go of old rules and dogma to become more free. And it's not aligned much to the world of yang and the masculine force that conquers and prospers in a commercial world. It's more embracing of the feminine and prospering in the inner worlds. Because so much healing comes from the feminine energy, which we call the feminine spirit. But the beauty of this spiritual journey is you can take as long as you wish and go as far as you wish. And going just a little way allows you to formulate a new way of looking at things. Then you can come back to the path 10 years later if you wish. I have people that have been coming with me all the way that started 20 years ago. They will probably still be there at the very end. Maybe it's because they know I'll get them there. It's fine to travel down the path a ways and then take a detour to discover something about yourself. It's good not to be too dogmatic. And what works for you may not work for another. What works for me is only for the crazy guys. You see, certain people are destined to become what I call the fringe dwellers. They're not necessarily hippie revolutionaries or New Age space cadets. The fringe dwellers are different in that they silently think differently. You might have been working in a humdrum TikTok job at the post office for 40 years, but in your mind you don't belong to these systems. You know that you are a citizen of a far country, a spiritual consciousness that doesn't really fit the regular mindset of this world. It makes you different, not special necessarily, it's just that you're not aligned to the way the world thinks. Being on the fringe can sometimes cause you a lot of pain and difficulty, especially if you fight it. I realized I didn't fit at about the age of 10. I was raised in Africa before television was invented, and at the age of 10, I was shipped off to an austere English boarding school. It was like a prisoner of war camp, Stalag 14. There, I had to pretend to be an upper crust Englishman, but the truth was, I was neither upper crust nor English. I was a little African kid, albeit a white African kid. I knew nothing about the mindset or the ideals of an English gentleman and his pleasures, like rugby and cricket and other strange games and rituals I'd never seen before, and I knew which snakes are poisonous and which are not. But that wasn't very useful on the playing fields of England. That's where my fringe dweller mentality started. At about the age of 12, I formed a small alternative society. There was about a dozen of us. We lived in the roof of the school's gymnasium. It was a perilous journey across narrow iron girders to get to the gap between the gymnasium ceiling and the outside roof of the building. Once in that magical hidden world, you had to watch your step, because if you missed the iron joist that held the ceiling up, you would fall through to the gymnasium floor, 20 to 30 feet below. I lived in that roof with my pals on and off for 5 years. Every spare moment of my school life was in that roof. We never plotted to destroy the system, just to survive it. School was very nasty, a very violent place, and we found if we stuck together and if we pooled our resources, we could not only survive, but thrive. We got 2 shillings and 6 pence pocket money each week, which at today's exchange rate is about 24 cents US. But in clubbing our meager capital, we found we could buy stuff that other boys wanted, candy, food, etc., and sell them at a small but well-deserved profit. And so our little society of teenage fringe dwellers thrived. We felt free and safe living in the roof, away from the school prefects and masters and teachers that would beat us with a stick at the slightest excuse. And we were quick and agile and fairly fearless. We could run across the narrow iron girders that held up the roof in seconds, even in the dark. So we never got caught, not once in 5 years. The interesting thing was that the boy that lived in the roof was the authentic me, the feeling me, the sensitive me, the one that would share and help others. And the boy that was on the playing fields pretending to be an English gentleman was the fake, competitive me, an image that was forced upon me against my will. We all suffer from conformity. It's a mind control disease. It's how society and our families legislate over us to keep us in their mental prisons. It's ghoulish, really. In my 20s, my mother, who was a great believer in spiritualism and mediumship, gave me a book called something like The Powers That Be. It was all about spiritualism and the hierarchies of angels that guide spiritual seekers to a higher perception. I suddenly saw there was a possible way out of this harsh world to a spiritual world, a place for those that didn't fit. It was another ceiling to discover and perhaps hide behind. To know that that was a possibility changed my life. It was an enormous impetus for me. I suddenly saw being a fringe dweller is just fine as long as you're not plotting to burn down City Hall. It's fine not to fit. It's fine to seek the society of others who also don't fit. It's fine to travel away and leave it all behind you and embark on a great journey of discovery and a voyage to find the freedom of the real you. It's okay and permitted to find your own relationship with God rather than borrowing one from others or having one imposed upon you by some system of control or an institution. I soon made it my life's quest to find the hidden door, the one that leads to the celestial worlds. And after about 30 years of trial and error and a few spooky dead ends, I finally found it. And so will you, if you have a desire for it, as I'm sure you do. The journey beyond enlightenment is essentially the journey beyond the ego's fears and its incessant demands and the stress that that creates in your life. Fear is a part of the ego's prison. It drives you to act strangely. You can change that. The world of the ego is not an authentic world, so what we seek to do in our journey beyond enlightenment is to arrive back at the authentic self, the feeling self. That is your true identity. It is the eternal you. And in it is the power of the knowing of who you are and what your life's mission is. Who are you? What are you doing here? What purpose do you serve? Once you can answer that, you disappear. Well, sort of. It's as if everything you think you are and your personality and all that you know and hold dear your life story, the very memory of you, melts and disappears. And at the very end of the journey, there is nothing there. Just an eternal silence. Nothing. Wow! Just awe. An indescribable beauty and awe. It sounds strange, eerie even. But in fact, it's very beautiful, because once you go past all the definitions of yourself, then you will also go past the pain, and you will eventually know who you are, what your life's mission is. You will see yourself beyond terms of enlightenment, beyond the arrogance of ignorance, and you will finally know the secret. It will bring you great joy. In later sessions, I'll talk to you at length about the resonance of your soul. You're a sound, an imprint that you make on life. That imprint of your soul can heal not only you and your loved ones, but humanity in general. And you won't necessarily have to hang a shingle on your door advertising your opening hours, as that may be too limiting. If your resonance is right, you will only have to walk past people and they will already begin to heal. To change your resonance is to change the resonance of the world. We define what we think we are. It makes us feel safe. So we work hard to become Harry the doctor, or Mrs. So-and-so the mother, the social worker, the teacher. These are evolutions of the mind and the intellect. But it can be a tiring and limiting experience. Playing out the role you have selected for yourself is often the recipe for a lot of pain, because your whole existence is framed in the definitions you and others have invented for yourself. They are emotional, intellectual clusters that you belong to, groupings of like mind, much like joining a golf club and being in the energy and cluster of golf and the mindset of golf things. In the end, you are vast and eternal, and all the silly rules and limitations will eventually melt and become meaningless and unimportant, for you are destined to arrive at the infinite you. You enter into the eternity of all things, where human titles and stuff, even the human body, has no meaning. You see, it's in the losing of the you that you think is you, that you eventually arrive at the new you, that disappeared identity. The human that had so much fear and pain is represented by a vast version of you, connected to everything. Part of all the primal forces and the spirits of nature and angelic beings and all manner of wonderfulness that exists beyond the memory of what I call stored pain, which are the ancient memories in your subconscious or your soul. Then the connection you make is one of pure bliss, and all the honor and reconciliation of that is beyond the light and the dark, beyond solid and not solid. It is a fusion of your soul, a deliverance from evil, a place where you hover as nothing and everything at the same time. It's a quirky thing to think of, but once you let go of what you think you are and the definitions that you are, then you can become everything. It's the bliss of belonging once more, the bliss of remembering. Let's talk about how to go from phony to authentic, and how you will turn your evolution to go the other way, for that will power you along, and you need that flip of perception before we can access anything else. Imagine it like this. Life for many is confusing and scary, and rather brutal at times. It's a painful journey through the unknown. You have to struggle and compete and work hard to make ends meet. The ego soon builds a tower for you to live in. It feels safer. It protects you from dealing with people and experiencing pain and disappointment. You're elevated in your mind, anyway, above the crowd. From there, you can gaze down on humanity through your separation and your imagined specialness. And you could sell yourself the idea that the destiny of ordinary people is not your destiny, that you've been elevated and chosen and made special. That is what the ego likes, to be higher and distanced from others. That is why the ego likes observers and glamour. Observers make the ivory tower of the ego more real. And that is why people boast and show off and make a great story of their minor achievements. They seek recognition and status. They seek altitude for their ivory tower. The ivory tower is sustained by the electricity of the ego. The more electricity a person has, the more they can be moody and capricious and self-centered. The moody, demanding pop star is an example of the electricity of the ego running rampant. To sustain the power of their importance and their divine-like status, they need constant attention, constant input. It's a high-maintenance lifestyle. The ego drives people to seek that status and a position over others. Glitzy stuff, flashy cars, the red carpet, the VIP lounge, all create attention. The attention of others creates electricity for the ego. And through that incoming energy, the ego seeks to falsely elevate itself. It's our ego's way of raising itself up to the center stage. We seek electricity, external energy sources to hold us up. It helps us feel safe and less vulnerable. That is the illusion of specialness that comes from the ego's sense of separation. But that specialness often comes at a terrible price. For in the isolation of elitism and the ivory tower, you become ever so slightly mad. The electricity of the tower fries you in the end, as you will need more and more and more to keep the illusion going. It blinds you to reason. You only see your mind and your ideals and your terms and definitions. The other 6 billion people here on Earth are more or less irrelevant, except as how they might feed the ego's needs. You're on top of the tower with an old rusty gun, marching up and down, guarding the edifice of your ideals. It doesn't really matter if your ideals are tiring you out or if they're gradually killing you, as long as you're king or queen of the tower, and as long as you can shut out pollution in the form of contradictions of the ego and or the presence of other humans and other ideas. Of course, at the top of the tower, the madman or the madwoman isn't actually any safer than anyone else. The height is an illusion, and the protection is arbitrary at the very least. The reason is that the tower costs time and money and stress to maintain. You have to buy a car that is perhaps more than you can afford. Maybe you live in a place that is too much rent, that has trappings that have to be financed. And the ego will want this and that and then another thing. And soon you are its slave, rushing about trying to give it what it wants. And it usually wants one thing after the next. Take a moment and take a good look. What is your ivory tower made of? Are you a prisoner of stress and your ideals? Are you spiritually trapped? And being up there can make you lonely and isolated, and usually you'll be very cold spiritually, even though you may pretend to be social and warm, while in fact you see everyone as dispensable, and perhaps you treat them with disdain and indifference. Your ego acts as the ministry of authorized information. It's up in its madhouse, and anyone contradicting the edicts of the Minister of Information is due for annihilation, or you'll banish them from your world and send them away. People that contradict information you hold to be true have to be made wrong and belittled. This is the controlling mechanism of the dark side of mankind. It's our attempt to impose ourselves on others. We know best. We are the divinely selected ones, the chosen ones. All others must be heretics and heathens, because they don't agree with us. And of course, they are not quite as special and chosen as the fool on the tower, for he or she is divinely selected to be something very important and very special. Most religions and most spiritual groups and philosophies, they create the sense of the enlightened being as being a superior being. Here are the ignorant people, and here is the enlightened Baba on the path who has the answer, and so on. So it's this idea of, let's say, the Pope is infallible, that this Baba over here is enlightened. And of course, these are elitist concepts. They are concepts that seek to raise a human above others. And so we must worship this being and kiss his toe because he's enlightened. And so that's the old-fashioned way of looking at enlightenment. But the way that we deal with enlightenment in this audio series is to understand that enlightenment is a trap, The minute you sit at the crossroads and you're enlightened, then you need a throne and a cushion, and you need chelas around you, students, you need to create an ashram. It's all the world of the demigod again. Or you're some grand bishop or cardinal and you have a throne and fine robes and a gold chalice to drink from. And all of that is a construct of ego. It's a construct of control, where these priests and these enlightened beings will establish control over the lesser mortals in the congregation. But we see enlightenment as basically a con. It's a place to get stuck. If you're stuck on the throne, if you're stuck on the pulpit, if you're stuck as an enlightened being, you haven't got anywhere to go. You just create this ashram around you. And so what we say is, like, enlightenment is utterly worthless to you, because we seek to retreat. We seek to go sideways. We seek to become nothing. You know, if you had all the power in the world and you could literally materialize things out of nowhere, you couldn't show it to people. Because if you did, you would become like a magician on TV. You would have followers and worshippers, and you would be controlling the people by your power and their lack of power. So that's why all power is hidden away, all true knowledge is hidden, and the only knowledge that's available is the fake knowledge. So you read these documents, you read this dogma, and they seek to entrap you. They seek to take you away from where you find yourself, the society and the ideas that you were born with or those that you feel comfortable with, and they seek to impose another set of rules. And those set of rules almost always involve subjugating yourself to them, to the meditation group, to the church, to the ashram, to the whatever it is. So they're all basically forms of entrapment. And what we seek to do is to become unentrapped, so to speak. We seek to say, look, this enlightenment thing is a crock, because I don't want to sit on a throne and have hundreds of followers. What I just want to do is have the knowledge and the power. And I do understand that once I have the knowledge and the power, that I'll not be able to show it to anybody. But it doesn't bother me, because in my heart, I want to serve humanity. But I don't have to be aware of the fact that they're aware or not aware. Like the idea of the initiate that can walk through a village, change its evolution, bring calm to the village, because the initiate's heart, her heart or his heart, is resonating at such a pulse that the imprint that the initiate puts on the village calms everybody and wakes them up and makes them more aware. And then the initiate walks out of the village and they never did figure out who on earth she was or he was. He just stood at the well for a day or two and talked to a few people, and that was all he did. So that's the idea that we're coming to, that true power is always hidden. True knowledge is not available. The only knowledge that's available, generally speaking, is the lies. I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Masaru Emoto. He's the Japanese professor that has photographed frozen water crystals. He would hold a tube of water and write on it the word Hitler. And then he'd freeze the water and take photographs of the water crystal. And they would come out all dark and chaotic looking. Or he writes the word joy on the label and the water crystals form like a beautiful snowflake. Professor Emoto's pioneering work really highlights for us the effect you have on your surrounds and the way you imprint light for the better or for the worst. Almost all of your body is water, so you're a mobile puddle. It travels around with you, warping reality or healing it, depending on how you feel and express yourself minute by minute. The water crystal of what you are is very important. It travels around with you. When you're warm and tactile and you genuinely care for humanity from your heart, you push away the imprint of negative dark beings and you draw to you the beginnings of a celestial dimension. A mini heaven on earth walks around with you. When you're cold and you seek domination and control over others, or you seek vengeance, or you wish others ill, you fall into the arms of the darker forces. It's easy to do. We all fall the other way at some point in our lives, as the ego likes power and it seeks vengeance, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. All sounds pleasing to the ego. But that is the loveless world of the phony self. There you can find justification for all sorts of nastiness and silent crimes against humanity. It takes a brave person to go the other way and offer forgiveness instead of seeking vengeance. You may think that salvation comes from being special and chosen and part of some elite system. Dream on. Elitism is very dark, as it excludes others. In fact, deliverance comes from ordinary and human, and not needing to be special. Drop being special and you are already walking in the right direction. Part of the reverse perception I speak of is hard to see, for we're all programmed to seek satisfaction and to seek the attention of others. Yet the right direction is to seek to become humble and sensitive towards others. And rather than asking how will life sustain you, you should start to think of how you might serve humanity. Spiritual empowerment, the journey beyond enlightenment, doesn't seek to make you more special. In fact, it seeks to liberate you from the need to be special. It liberates you from the need to hold up the ivory tower, the need for more and more. When you watch TV, you'll see one guy that claims he's the world's greatest crocodile catcher. Then another fool claims he's the world's greatest bounty hunter. And another is the greatest running back, and here's the greatest chef, and there's a whole host of the world's greatest rappers, hip-hoppers and flip-floppers making incredible baskets on the basketball court. And in the end, they're all mad fools on the ivory tower, calling out to the heavens saying, I'm the greatest, the king and queen of the castle. I'm squeaky clean and special and different. And I'll be forever immortalized in my deeds, fully selected by God and special. That is what I am. Imagine if you didn't have to be special. How weird that might feel for some. Maybe it would feel really liberating. People could ask you, are you the world's greatest blah, blah, blah? And you'd say proudly, no, I'm not the world's greatest anything. I worked terribly hard to arrive last. The trick is to arrive eventually at nothing and not be the world's greatest anything. Quite the reverse. I've learned a very simple secret, and that is to retreat from the world of boasting and to step back into silence and the comfort of the forest. I've found it best to let all those on the ivory tower push and shove and compete while I stand off and watch. I feel safe because I'm not sticking out in the crowd ready to be knocked off by another competing ego, and I'm not in the competition of humanity at all. The trick is to agree to lose. You don't have to win. Agree to be last. Be happy with last. People might say, aren't you bothered that you have to wait in line while other important people in front of you go ahead? And you'll say, no, it doesn't bother me where I am in the line. The people that need to strive and push and fight to go first will burn themselves out and become sad. And while they may be first in today's line, tomorrow they won't have a place in any line, and that might upset them. So I'm happy to take whatever place in the line no one else wants. My place in the line is irrelevant, as I'm busy watching a sparrow talking to another on the roof over there. Now here is a reverse idea that's quite exciting that might impel you to a new perspective. What if I told you that you could easily become one of the most powerful people in the world, and that you could have vast energy, so vast that you could get almost anything you wanted just by deciding to materialize it in front of your very eyes? But there's a few catches. First, you can never tell anyone that you have the power, and you can never do anything in front of people that might give them that idea, or any showing off like that. In fact, to make it, to keep to your agreement, you will actually have to be anonymous about it all. And sometimes you will purposely try to look like a bit of a fool and a bit of an incompetent, so that people never twig that you know what you know. The next catch, you can have anything you want almost immediately because you can materialize it. But because you have that power, you will never be able to use it. The reason why you can't is this. You are here to work and love and understand the earth plane. You are here to transfer energy to others. That's it. You can't use it to enhance your ego and become the world's greatest something or other. You can keep bits of it and make your life easy and flowing, but you can't hoard the power. You have to get rid of it as it comes into your life. Otherwise, you'd be misusing the power just as everybody else tries to misuse it. If you're serious about going beyond enlightenment, what you're saying is you will work silently to become enlightened. You'll never tell a soul once you make it. Almost all the initiates I know, The ones that have a real command of the hidden door are very humble and very anonymous. You would never spot them in a crowd. They don't have to say much because they do know. You're going to go beyond enlightenment because you don't need enlightenment. It's a trap for the spiritually elevated. You probably knew that, but maybe you needed me to remind you. The fact is, the more inner power you have, the less you will ever be able to show anyone. So then you may say, listen up, Sturi Baba, what is the point of striving to acquire perception and abilities if I can never show anyone or make a profit from it? Well, what's the answer? What do you think? Here's what I learned going down that way. All great power is always hidden, so it can pass through the night and rescue people from their ivory towers, from their tormented lives, and to love and serve humanity to a better end. That is it. In rescuing people, you'll have more than anything else in the world. People will be pulled to you endlessly. It's an etheric thing. It's in your life force energy. You can help people without their knowing, without their ever having realized that you helped them. Let's go back to the reverse. The opposite of accumulation and egocentricity is humility and service. At some point, you will have to learn to serve humanity if you have not already done so. You can't get out of this evolution and go beyond it without first having served. At the end of your life, all the things that you ever did for yourself count as nothing. They have little or no value. The great empires you won and the battles you fought with others and all the striving will be worthless. There's only one currency of worth that you can take with you, and that is what you felt about humanity, and what did you do for them? Did you love them and care for them? Did you go out of your way to make sure they were okay? Did you give them what you had? Did you share or did you hoard? Did you run to eat first or did you eat last? Nothing else counts. For all the other ivory tower stuff and empire building and triumph over others was all fluff. It showed how easily tricked you could become. And all the anger and hatefulness was just one ivory tower clanging as it fell against others. So, what have you done for others? That's the only question you will have to answer. If your karma is good, the question will be easy. You will humbly turn and wave your arm all around. And there will be all those that you have healed, and all those that you held in your arms when they were scared, and those that you provided for when they fell into misfortune. And there might be thousands of them, tens of thousands of them maybe. It's unconditional love, without having to get something back or expecting anything in particular. Do this. Sometime in the next week or so, do something valuable for someone without them knowing that you did it. Never mention it to anyone, and you'll soon get what I'm speaking of. There are people out there that you haven't met yet, that can't manage without you. They are like wounded children. They were given the wrong set of coordinates. Their life is bound to failure and misery, and what little meaning they have can be stripped from them in a second, and their cells will become polluted by their darkness, and the slippery path to the end is in sight. They have no hope, none. They will die surrounded by their ideals, surrounded by ugliness, surrounded by the dark forces. Only you can save them, if they want to come, that is. Now remember, you can't be of service if you feel obligated to do so through shame, guilt, and duty, or if your ego needs the whiteness of it all. Like, look at me, how marvelous I am, I'm serving humanity. Service is a silent thing that comes from a deep inner connection to the souls of other humans and the well-being of the animal kingdom. You serve because it's your destiny to do so, and you want to. It's a form of deliverance, And in delivering your own soul to a spiritual redemption, you also deliver others, and they will become your passport to the hidden doorway I've spoken of. It's all in the feeling of your humanity and in the expressing of it, how large your heart can become. It is in that that you'll come to see the hidden door within you. Remember, to go into another world and see the celestial nature of it all, you have to cross a dark world to get there. I'll talk about the morph and the mirror world in the next session. I think you will find it very exciting and unusual. But first you have to look and see if you have a genuine spirituality inside you. Do you just pretend to be nice? Sometimes the living in the light approach that sort of New Age people espouse is sweet, but it isn't authentic, because it makes you into a suffering servant, or it causes you more pain than necessary. You aren't required to suffer other people's pain for them, and you are required, if you want a healthy lifestyle, to set boundaries. So you can say to somebody, listen, I truly love you and adore you, and, you know, when you play the trumpet at 3 a.m, it's bloody irritating because I have to go to work at 5. You know, please stop or move out. And that is normal. So it's always to do with communication. It's always being there for them as a human, not criticizing them and making them wrong because they play the trumpet, but laying a boundary that says, look, if you want to play the trumpet, you're going to have to move out, brother. I know you're only 7 years old, but you'll have to figure it out, you know? Or you got to listen to what daddy says and you ain't playing the trumpet at 3 a.m., you know? At the point when you can manage on your own, that's fine. Or maybe we can come to a middle ground and we can get a trailer for you at the end of the yard, 4 miles away, and you can go play there. So, again, living in the light doesn't require a gummy approach where you let the world trash you and ride roughshod over your feelings. It's more, again, always being authentic, being true to people. So when it's driving you nuts, you can say so. But, of course, what happens is we make the mistake of coming out from a vindictive, critical approach. So we're saying, I'm squeaky clean and white and I want to sleep and you're jolly dark for playing the trumpet. But they're not dark for playing the trumpet. They love the trumpet. And maybe you staying up all night not sleeping is fine by them. They're not evil because they play the trumpet. So I think the main approach is one of not making people dark. Just accepting who they are and allowing them to be who they are, and then setting a boundary when what they are doing is detrimental or irritating or difficult for you. Anytime that you're showing your spirituality, you're in the shadow. The more squeaky white and clean and innocent you pretend to be, the more dark you actually are. That's your darkest moment, when you proclaim how wonderful you are. It's the healer that makes this great show of healing, or the guru that makes this great show of being wise, or the teacher that has this massive hall and 7,000 people come and touch her leg or something. That's a big load of ivory tower. Again, it's always humility. If you heal, you heal without them knowing that you've healed them. If you teach without ever realizing that you taught, because you taught by example. And that's the genuine healer. The genuine healer is one where you don't realize they've healed you. Or they've healed you very inconsequentially. They've sort of made a passing remark, and suddenly that passing remark clicks into your psychology, and you realize that the whole of your sickness comes to the fact that your relationship with your brother's toxic. So they healed you in that way. We all have to go through the sort of arrogance of enlightenment. We all go through elitism to work out how terrible it is. Some people never work it out and they go to their grave in this sort of elitist mindset. Enlightenment for many people is this sort of spirituality that they'll walk around in with a great sort of thing on their chest, you know, the medallion that people wear and that sort of stuff that expresses their spirituality. But that isn't a spirituality. The idea is to be spiritual without anyone ever realizing you are spiritual. So yeah, we go from being completely egocentric and unaware to being much more aware, and then we all go through the elitism of spirituality, believing that we've been chosen, which of course is one of the crimes of the fallen angel, is to be like a god. We seek to become as a god, higher than ordinary people. And at the other end of it, we realize we didn't need enlightenment. It was a pain in the neck. And so we burn all the robes and all of those gongs and all of that stuff. And then we walk out and we infiltrate back into society without anybody ever figuring out who we are. In my book, Affirmations, I talk about a concept called variance. I'll just discuss it here for a few minutes, as it really talks to the essence of a positive reversal of self. Variance is the gap between what you pretend to be, what you think you are, the mask or persona that you present to the world, and what you actually are. You could say that variance is a tape that measures the height of your ivory tower. All great spiritual journeys and the path of the initiate leads towards an ego death, a place where you become aware of the variance, and then the tower falls in front of your eyes. The authentic you has enormous power. When you join it and become the same as it, a synapse of energy takes place. It's a burst of light caused by a sudden fluctuation in the quantum field. This is vital to your enlightenment. If you don't collapse the illusion voluntarily, it is eventually collapsed for you. If you can control the collapse gradually, it's much less painful than when it comes upon you in a fast hurry, imposed from elsewhere. Let me explain. The reason why people feel blank and hopeless and in despair at this time is because they don't have the power of their own soul to drive them along. It is as if the real you is locked away, held prisoner in the tower by the phony you. I don't know if you've ever felt that there was something terribly wrong, something missing in your life, a splinter in your mind, as Morpheus says in the Matrix film. The missing bit is in the mirror world. I'll talk a lot about that in the course of this series. There's another you, the feeling you, that is formed by the subconscious mind. It is the storehouse of your dreams. It is the authentic you. It is the perpetual memory of you, your soul. Once you come back and retrieve it, suddenly all sorts of creativity and possibilities come from within you, and you have the opportunity to garner real worth in your life. Sure, that might be a nice money-making idea, or it could just be newfound friendships and a sense of belonging. Abundance is not necessarily cash. It's the warmth of humanity and animals around you. It's service to mankind, and it is being served. It probably wasn't really your fault. We are driven by fear and inadequacy and bad luck and poor choices. We are driven by many factors. This is not a level playing field, and so you should not be too harsh on yourself and others. Do this. Get a little notebook, one that you can slip into your purse or your pocket, and start over the next few days to jot down all the things in your life that make sense and the ones that don't. You are looking to notice the variance between what you have to do and what you really feel about it. Some of it will be obvious and you know it's phony, and some of it is more obscure. It'll only dawn on you as you think about it and as you ask of your super-knowing to show you. You have to be fair with yourself and compassionate. You can't cheat on yourself, telling yourself lies, as that is a variance of its own, isn't it? Draw a line down the center of your little variance booklet and put true on the one side of the center line and not true or partly true on the other. Your job or business, do you like it? Are you fulfilled? Or do you hate it? Home. Is it fulfilling and supportive, or is it a nightmare? Is it where you want to be? Can you afford it? Relationships. Are they supportive or draining? Money. Are you sensible and honest, or irrational and dishonest? Lifestyle. Is it healthy and sustaining, or unhealthy and destructive? If it's destructive, it's probably your inner shadow trying to kill you. Are you brave enough to look at that and set yourself free? Or will you remain a victim? Can you love yourself, lumps and bumps and all? Time management. Are you rushing about with very little time for yourself? That is a variance of its own, one that you should look at. Then you look at if you really care about delivering your soul to a new redemption. Perhaps it doesn't really bother you. Perhaps you feel you are already perfect. Such thoughts are a trap. Remember that. Then ask, how do you relate to others? Are you distanced from humanity? Do you really care for them? Is it all about you and what you want in this lifetime? Or are you aligned to the needs of others? How much love do you offer? And how much silent resentment and hate? Are you an angel in disguise or a hidden predator? Are you stingy or generous? Are you open and accepting or closed down and dogmatic? Do you cast a kind eye to everyone? And a deep sense of justice and acceptance. Live and let live. or are you judgmental and cruel towards others? The way to work this out is this. Think about someone you don't really agree with, and then ask yourself if you respect them anyway. Do you care for their humanity, even if you don't like them? Do you care for their soul, even if you virulently disagree with their opinions and their actions in life? The reason why this type of equanimity is vital is that in the mirror world, any kind of judgment or antagonism will soon take your spirit down. It's a bad trait to find fault in others and to denigrate them and make them wrong. You eventually want your life to be seen as proper and right. How will you do that if you don't offer that to others, if you've always made them wrong? Taking an equitable stance towards humanity is the only safe way to go across to the mirror worlds. And finally, here in this opening discussion on reversal, can I ask you a really difficult question? Are you grateful? I mean truly grateful. Or do you just pretend? When you say thank you, do you mean it from your heart? Or is it just a social thing, fobbing people off? Are you actually relating to someone's soul and acknowledging them for their work and their kindness to you? The reason I ask is that I've noticed that much of the time people are not grateful at all, and they don't even bother to say thank you properly. They just expect to be sustained, but they can't acknowledge the goodness that's come to them from others. Sometimes I think they feel that they're owed a living in this life, regardless of how little effort they put in. Gratitude is important. It goes hand in hand with humility and softness. Do you see how spooky and wonderful it gets real quick? If you do this right, it'll make you cry because you'll see the darkness of it all. And once you see it and once you own it, your life will dramatically change. I promise. I've seen thousands of people go through this, and some of it was tears and compassion and moments of heaving emotion. But at the end, they came out light and angelic and forgiven and liberated. The greatest gift you can offer yourself in this life is to redeem yourself. Once you agree to stop running away from yourself, you'll be free, and then you'll be able to see it properly. I've never seen instant absolution, instant redemption. All there ever was, what could be described as a gradual climbing out of a dark world of variance and confusion and fake ideas towards the spiritual, authentic world. You don't need to beat yourself up. It's okay to screw up. That was your karma and other people's karma. But you just have to look and see and accept all those aspects of who you are, the nice bits and the horrid bits. Let's review a few more ideas of reversal. Life can be scary. That can cause fear. The natural reaction is to become more aggressive and more yang towards others. But eventual safety and a higher perception lies in the power of softness. Some know this already, but you may not always embrace it. It isn't obvious at first. The ego feels that the more threat it offers, the safer it will be. But that's not so. It doesn't seem obvious at first, but the more aggressive you are, the more the hard forces come against you. So spirituality is a measure of how soft you can become, not what rules you follow. It seems strange, but in establishing a spiritual softness, you come to the first of three liberations. Each is an emotional release and a huge spiritual advance. With this audio series is a guided meditation. It's a quiet session of prayer and introspection. It takes you to the three liberations, so you can go there anytime and work on them and process them more and more. They are vital. You cannot proceed without them. The energy of the world is rapidly shifting. Your life will become ever more problematic without these perceptions. The first liberation is you have to agree to make peace with the world. What I've talked of in this session so far is an unobtrusive attempt for you to make peace with yourself, to turn yourself round and go the other way. Now you have to go beyond the story of your life and evolve beyond it. That is the enlightened way. To learn to forgive yourself for some people is very, very hard. But again, it's because they make such a story of everything. I know people that have gone into inner child therapy who 10 years later, they're grown 40-year-old women, millionaires, some of them, and they're still whinging on about their inner child and their mother was inadequate and their father was a drunk. Let it go. You know, let it go. You have to go into an act of contrition. You have to observe the mistakes you made and have an act of contrition over it, you know, where you genuinely feel sorry. You don't just fob it all off with, sorry about that. You feel sorry. Then you go into atonement. And atonement is where you attempt to make good with the people that you've hurt. But if you can't, because they don't live here anymore, so to speak, then you atone by being kind to other people. So the first thing is awareness. The second thing is attrition. The third thing is atonement. And then beyond that, it's transcendence. You leave. In other words, you're not callous. You're not shrugging and saying, that's it. You completely comprehend where you made mistakes. And you're sort of embarrassed about the fact you did make those mistakes. But in the higher knowing, in the sort of super knowing, you understand I'm weak. So today I affirm that I won't make the same mistakes again. Or if I do make the same mistakes, I'll try to make littler ones. You understand that when you made those mistakes, you really damaged other people. You hurt their feelings. And so you feel sorry for the fact you hurt them. You don't want to hurt them. You want to raise them up. And so you attempt to atone in whatever way you can atone. And then you transcend by reviewing it properly, atoning as best you can, creating this act of contrition, which is the act of saying, look, I'm not going to do this again. I realize I've really hurt people here. And then allowing yourself time to just walk beyond it or go beyond it to higher and better things, which kicks into the idea of service. You know, how will you serve? Because in service, we atone for the crimes of our past. It involves making peace with humanity. You can understand if you're emotionally involved in running battles with others and you harbor resentments, you are perpetually linked to them. It is as if you are spiritually welded to the people that you hate or fight with or resent. And they will probably have a very low spiritual energy, as they may be abusers or predators or aggressive and or arrogant. You can't rise above them until you release them and let them go. In the mirror world, which is the world of feelings and impulses and sentiments, you cannot escape from anyone that you are mentally or emotionally engaged with. Anyone or any group of people that you focus on with your mind and or with resentments and negative emotions. You and they exist in the same place in the mirror world. Imagine it as a neighborhood. You can't fight with people and escape their neighborhood. Almost everyone in the world has a personal story of pain, injustice, romantic upsets and emotional hits that they've taken over the years, as well as the rip-offs and the abuse you might have suffered, and all the times when you got your feelings hurt by others. It's your special story, and you may feel very justified, and you may well have been an innocent victim, but you have to wonder in the overall karma of eternity if there really are any innocent victims. If you believe in reincarnation, there might be an explanation there. It might explain why there seems so much injustice and why you got hurt. Some people feel they're innocent, but if you know the underlying feelings and emotion, you can see how often they wound up others in order to hurt them, or they set themselves up through greed. They would often taunt others in order to create a confrontation. But if you knew the underlying feelings and emotion, you can see how they often taunt others to create a confrontation, or they set themselves up through greed to suffer a loss. But whether you were innocent or guilty, or even partly guilty, or if you brought misfortune on yourself in some obscure way that you don't really understand, all that has to eventually become irrelevant for you now to proceed. Because if you can't make peace with the world, you're stuck. The injustice you feel is part of ancient stored pain, and that is inside of you. And some of it is because of the sins of the father or the mother. Pain inherited down through the centuries, unresolved clusters trickling down through history. You will never escape the global karma, or yours, if you're perpetually locked into the energy of your ex-husband or your ex-wife, say, or people that you met on this journey through life. Let them go. You have to love your tormentors and offer them every warmth and goodwill that you can manage. For the hellish world is cold, and it seeks retribution and vengeance. And all the while, heaven is warm and embracing and forgiving. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, is a menu card for the reptile's banquet. It has no spiritual validity at all. Beyond the people you know that you pull to you in this life, you must also release and forgive and forget the karma of your social or tribal cluster. A cluster is a grouping of people, like a native tribe or even the members of the same golf club. It's pockets in the consciousness of humanity that are reflected in the mirror world, where similar mindsets and traditions gather together. So the next liberation is the greater liberation of ditching what you were born with, the cluster. For example, if you were born an African American, you most likely have the injustice of slavery as part of your life story. It'll be in your genes, in your subconscious memory, in the archetypes of your tribal mind. And because of this, you may see the white man as a villain and a tormentor, and you might feel threatened by him. So he sits inside your shadow self. You are the victim. He is the slave trader. But wait a minute. Do any African-American slaves live in your hometown? Were you born a slave? Did you ever meet an African-American slave? Unless you're about 150 years old, you're bound to answer no. So the terrible injustice of slavery is not really a part of your life. It's just a rotten story. The problem is in having white men in your shadow as the enemy. You push away all the white men and women who might help you in this life or give you a hand up. Do you see how the tribal shadow is so destructive that it holds you back spiritually? It's just the same for the Jews. They have their sad stories, and the Palestinian story says how dark and nasty the Jews are, and so the Jews are inside the Palestinian shadow as the Germans are inside the Jewish shadow, and so forth and so on. But all that terribleness is in the past. You've got to let it go. You have to grant yourself the second liberation, the one that allows you to go beyond your religious, social, tribal, or national karma. You don't need it anymore. And you have to arrive to where you see yourself just as an eternal being, a loving, evolving, spiritual being, not an African or a Jew, or a poor, downtrodden Catholic in South America, or a disenfranchised woman. It's all story, nothing more, just a story. Some of it isn't even true, but it serves a purpose for unsophisticated people that have not resolved their shadow. They need their special story, and they need the memory of pain that was suffered in the past so they can feel squeaky clean now and holy. So they can garner money and compensation, say, or sympathy, or they can feel they can get some special advantage as a victim. Or they can get some special status. Everyone in the cluster is allowed to feel angry all of the time. It's deadly. Because in order to step to another world spiritually, you have to more or less finish with the emotion of this one. I don't mean that you have to die, but you have to resolve the pain, understand it, finish it, stop complaining, and go past it. If not, you die spiritually weak, floundering. You die in the cluster of the wounds of your tribe. And you will drift to that part of the mirror world where wounded Jews are fighting with wounded Muslims. And they are close to all the wounded native people. And over here is a cluster of 4 million wounded Irish souls, people that died in the famine. And they all have the English in their shadow. And soon you can see how our human evolution is knotted and interlaced. My pain, your pain, the collective Jungian pain. If you can't go beyond it, you're stuffed. You'll float down the pain drain. Where does it lead? I know it's hard to go past the sense of injustice and the rage that certain political and social issues evoke, but we didn't incarnate into a world that is fair. We didn't come to a planet where people are respectful and caring of nature, the animals, or the environment. So the only option is to believe that there is a higher order of beings that watch over and protect things. And they will not allow the planet to fall into absolute degradation and destruction. So that is the third liberation, to see that it's our karma and the planet's karma, the animals and so forth. It is to face injustice and to hold steady knowing there must be a resolution in the end. even if we haven't much evidence of it so far. It all exists at a higher level because we exist at a higher level. I think in the end all injustice will be set right, and all sadness will melt away. Maybe not in our lifetime, but then again we might be in for a wonderful surprise. There's a group of beings from another world that have recently fought their way into this dimension, and we are waiting to see how that will affect things. All is not lost. So the first liberation is to allow all those that have hurt you to go on their way, and the second liberation, you let go of any clusters that trap you, and the final liberation is you go beyond the anger and the pain of the terrible injustice suffered by the planet as an organism, and the animals and the general injustices people suffer every day. If you're a sensitive person, the pain of the world will bother you no end. We don't know why there has to be so much pain. It's a lot to do with the evil in our collective human shadow. But all you can do is process yours. You can't let yourself be overwhelmed by the global situation. And if you say to me, "But Stewie, I'm a one-eyed Chinese gay male with a wooden leg, and I've loads of emotion and pain, and there's Tiananmen Square and the Long March and millions that died in the Cultural Revolution inside my cluster. I can't do bye-bye Beijing right now. I need to clunk around here for a bit longer and work it all out." And I'd say to you, "Sure, bro, come when you want. There's no rush." Now let me say this, the hidden door beyond enlightenment I speak of is not a mythological place, nor do I speak of it in allegorical terms. It's real, it exists to be found, and I found it, and so have many others. Just in case you think I'm kidding, there is a little reference manual that comes with this series, and if you look in there on the first pages, you'll see some photos of human dematerialization. One was taken at my house in Australia. These photos are of people literally disappearing from this dimension. They're in a sensation we call the morph. In the next session, once I've laid out these introductory ideas, I'll talk a lot more about the world of the morph and how you can access it. It's hard to get a photo of dematerializations, as you can't set it up in bright light. You have to kind of fluke the photo at the exact right minute, but they're real. And they are part of where this incredible journey has gotten to so far. So when I talk to you about the gap and what lies in there for you to see and experience, just keep an open mind, if you will, and trust me, without ever giving up any of your own reality. And as you go through these CDs, I'll get you there. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy, it's a shortcut. You'll have to be a little disciplined and diligently follow me to the end of this series, because if you jump ship in midstream, you'll be like those that sadly wimped out because they didn't have enough strength of will or desire to succeed. You can go beyond the struggle in this life. It comes mostly from the fake you. The authentic you is holy and good and sacred. And by understanding it, you will create your own secret heaven in the roof of the gymnasium of your soul. And you can have your own world and your own title on the shelf. The authentic you, not the fake you. You can agree to be a fringe dweller and silently proud of it. I believe this audio series will help you enormously, not just to see the spiritual being that you are, but also to understand that there's a way of making peace with humanity, even inside what are often very restrictive, controlling systems that have enormous power over you. You can quietly wander off in your mind and your soul and eventually belong to something else. This is not a hypothetical idea, some airy-fairy promise. It's real. There's a gap in reality. It's well known, and you can walk through the gap to another world. I've taken hundreds of people, maybe 1,000. Trust me, they've all come back safely. They didn't come back the same, but I didn't promise them the same. I promised them different and more free. I'm not here as another guru teacher trying to convert the masses. What I have to offer is really for just a few people. For those people that are ready to walk away. Those people that are really ready to go beyond transcendence and enlightenment and realize that you don't need it. So this really isn't a philosophy that would ever become like 100 million strong with rules and dogma and stuff. There's no dogma in my stuff. There's no dogma in the journey beyond enlightenment. It's a very sort of liberating way because you don't have a dogma. So you could say, well, what compels you to teach this stuff? I have a system here and it works. And if you want to come with me and if you've got the courage, you know what they say in English slang, if you've got the bottle to come, I can show you. You can find it yourself. And your inner self, your mirror self, your super knowing or higher self or whatever you want to call it, it knows precisely and exactly how to get you there. Let's go to the next session and I'll talk about the rescue that is here and the one we've seen in the phenomena of the morph, and I'll show you how to get there yourself and how that may give you sight of yourself in the mirror world, how that will propel you past the clusters to a higher plane. Come on, let's go to session 2.